The Walking Dead Girl Podcast, episode 24. Hello, everybody. My name is Jasmine.
And this is Michael.
And I'm the Walking Dead Girl. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show The Walking Dead from AMC. In addition to reviewing the TV episodes right after they air, we sometimes have a few interviews with special guests.
If you want to give us feedback on the show, you can send email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com, or you can leave a comment on our website, thewalkingdeadgirl.com. We routinely read feedback and comments on the show.
Currently, we're reviewing Season 3, Episode 4, and it's called Killer Within Me, right? Yeah, Killer Within Me. And before we get started, I want to remind you guys that we will be discussing every gory detail about this TV show, so obviously there will be spoilers. Don't say we didn't warn you.
Well, actually, the episode is called Killer Within.
I have Killer Within Me in my thing.
Well, it's not within you. It's just Killer Within. It could mean many things.
No, I thought it was, I swear to God, it was Killer Within Me. I have here, didn't we talk about it? What?
No, it's called Killer Within.
They got their information wrong. Okay.
You got your information
yeah,
wrong.
I got my information wrong. It's called Killer Within.
So this has been a bit of a roller coaster of a ride. We're trying to catch up to all the episodes.
Oh my God, don't even get me started.
And it's hard because, you know, you have school and homework.
Yeah, I'm balancing AP classes and school and just overall school in general. It's like its whole category in itself.
I don't have anything to do. I just go to work and come home and that's it. That's my life. Well, in the evenings, I guess I could do it, but I can't do it alone. You're the Walking Dead girl.
Exactly. You need me.
It's your show.
But
this isn't going to be normal. I mean, this isn't what we're going to do when season 4 comes out.
Oh no, we're going to do it like every Sunday after the show. We're going to race upstairs and start recording.
Yeah, so once season 4 starts, we're just going to do on Sunday night.
Yep.
Do an episode and release it that night. So mm-hmm. You guys could have something to listen to and our comments. I think it'll be different because
have to hold back anything, you know?
Because we haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So it'll be fresh and everything. So that'll be exciting.
Also, when I'm finished doing my homework at like 1 o'clock in the morning, I like to listen to some podcasts.
Okay.
Other than myself. I actually don't listen to it at all, but I found this podcast called The Survivalist Prepper, the podcast. And basically...
Survivalist what?
Survivalist Prepper.
Oh, Prepper.
All about, yeah.
I thought you said Pepper, like no, pepper spray.
Prepper. Yeah, I know. I thought so too. And basically, it's like, it's a podcast about prepping and living off the grid when, you know, when the government falls or if there's an earthquake or if there's like a tornado or some natural disaster or, you know, political disaster. And basically teaching you how to be self-sufficient.
So this is like right up your alley.
Oh my God, yes.
Because you've been dying for something like this. I mean, you've been preparing.
Yes, I have a go bag, which they call in this one, what's it called? A bug out bag. I like that term better, a bug out bag. And yeah, see, stay up to date with the latest prepper news and information like bugging out and bugging in. I don't know what that means, but it sounds cool.
Do they talk about stuff like creating a bunker and stuff? And
yeah, like, I don't know. I listened to the first podcast, which talks about what they're going to be talking about. And yeah.
Is it just a new one that came out?
Yeah, it seemed like it's new. There's only like 9 episodes.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So we should keep an eye on that and give our listeners some tips.
Yeah, I know. So it was really cool. If you want to listen to a podcast to make your experience more real, listen to Survivalist Prepper.
Okay, so this episode, called Killer Within, is probably one of the most emotional ones we've seen so far.
It's the hardest. It's like watching Titanic. I hate Titanic, but I love Titanic. I hate it because, spoiler alert, Jack dies, okay, in case you didn't know. And I hate that part because it's not a happy ending.
You've just ruined it for like millions of people.
Whatever. I mean, if you it came out in 3D.
If you haven't seen Titanic, then...
Yeah, they released it in 3D.
It's not the most awesome movie in the world, but yeah. It's you just one of those things where you just have to see it once.
It's like Avatar.
Life. You got to see it. Well, I don't know about Avatar. I don't know if you have to see Avatar.
I have to see Avatar. I saw it like 3 times. Once when it came out, another time, and then 2 other times in class near the end of the year.
They showed you Avatar in school?
Yeah. We only got to watch like 45 minutes of it. So that was just like the first part.
Okay.
Anyway, back on topic.
So this is really emotional because, when we get to that point, you'll know why it's so emotional. But
yeah, it was the hardest episode for me to watch.
How do we start off
in the opening scene where we find this mystery guy dragging a dead deer and a can of gasoline behind him. And basically what this opening scene kind of shows is this random guy coming in, and we don't see his face, and basically he's leading walkers into the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And we assume that it's, what's his name, Andrew? Who else is going to be?
Yeah, really. I mean, you kind of put two and two together because the person's wearing prison garb.
Yeah.
And in one scene, he puts a heart.
Yeah, the last scene, he carefully places a heart.
In the an open door of the prison.
Yeah.
Or the gate or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the titles roll. And then after that,
We go to a much more happier scene where Rick mm-hmm. and Glenn and the rest of the group are really just, you know, doing regular perimeter stuff. I don't know what they're... Oh, yeah, they're burning the bodies. Is that what they were doing?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And then everyone's like, where's Glenn and Maggie? Oh, last time I checked, they're in the guard tower. Mm. And then they're like, came out half-dressed. Obviously, they did the nasty.
They were doing it in the guard tower.
Yeah, that was funny.
What were they doing, Jasmine?
Really, Dad? Really?
The birds and the bees. This is my excuse to teach you about the birds and the bees.
I learned that a long time ago.
And what's funny was Rick was saying, they were there last night. They're there again.
I didn't catch that.
It's like they've been, it's apparently it's a thing now. They just go to the guard tower.
Like no one else can go to the guard tower. And what spoils this beautiful and hilarious scene is that the inmates show up at the fence when they're supposed to stay in their cell area, right?
And there's one of them, his name is Axel.
Yeah.
He's a new character.
Yeah, he's like the southern kind of like Texan kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy is, what's his name? Carlos? No. What's his name? Oscar. His name is Oscar. And yeah, apparently they want in. They want to help be part of the group because they're sick and tired of seeing, you know, their dead friends still inside the cell blocks. And they're like, why didn't you just burn the bodies? And he's like, well, because every time we try to leave,
pull a body out, the walkers come gnawing at the fence or something.
Yeah, no, there's a hole in the fence. There's a break in the fence.
Oh, yeah.
So they start coming in, so they can't do anything. And Rick is not having any of it. You know, he's like, no, we had a deal. You stay there. We're not going to let you there. He's like, you can either stay in your cell block or leave. You know what I mean? And I kind of understand why Rick is so, you know, I'm not going to have these prisoners anywhere near me, is because he's a cop and those are prisoners, you know.
He doesn't touch them
at all. Yeah,
he's prejudiced against prisoners
because he puts them in prison.
His job was to put him in jail. So
although most of the group agreed with Rick, T-Dog on the other hand stepped up and said, you know, hey, this is the apocalypse, you know, I think they may really be good guys, we should give them a chance.
Yeah,
because if you let them go, you're basically just killing them,
right? And Axel says, you made your point, bro. We've paid our dues. You know, we just want to be together with you guys. Axel has a cool accent.
I know. I love his accent. And Oscar's the quiet one that's really is not going to stoop low to the point where he's begging. But Axel has
no problem begging.
Yeah.
Or kissing ass.
Basically, especially when Daryl was getting his motorcycle set up, and then Axel was like, oh, nice motorcycle, man. The engine sounds a little rough. I could tune it up for you if you want. And Daryl's like, stay away from me, and then just drives away. And then Oscar's like, just shut up, man. Stop talking.
Yeah, dude, really? It's like, you have no respect for yourself.
I know.
And so we see that T-Dog is actually stepping up and, you know, expressing his opinion. And it seems like, in general, T-Dog, since we've seen all episodes so far, and, you know, he hasn't had any major lines, and he hasn't had any major...
Any storyline.
Story. But here we see that he's kind of the sensitive guy.
Yeah, we've never seen this part of him.
He cares about them. Where do you think that's coming from?
What do you mean?
Like, why is he...
Well...
Yeah, why is he like that? Like, why does he want to help the prisoners?
Maybe because he's been in the hood, you know, he knows what these people are like. because he's grew up with them or something, and he knows not all of them are bad. And then maybe, I don't know. See, I don't know enough about T-Dog to make a good assumption.
Exactly. They haven't really expanded his character enough for us to know what he's thinking.
Yeah, we love T-Dog.
And Daryl says, you know, I knew guys like this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're
I grew up with them.
They're degenerates, but they're not psychos.
Uh-huh.
And then
T-Dog's like, yeah, right? So would you let them in? He's like, hell no. keep them out. Like, he basically wants them to go through what they went through out in the wild.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. They do have it easy. They didn't really experience anything.
Yeah, exactly.
And they haven't experienced any of the trauma.
Yeah, they don't give them a free pass.
And frankly, you know, they're complaining about, you know, the bodies and everything. And
when they haven't seen...
It's like, give me a break. So what? Like, deal with
it. I knew those guys.
Like, deal with it.
Like, everyone we know are dead, okay?
Yeah, deal with it, dude.
And one thing that Rick responded with a story that he had, which basically says, you know, I'm a cop. This is what I do. He talks about a story about this 19-year-old kid who stabbed his girlfriend, and all through court and the trials, he's blubbering, saying that he never did it, and he feels so bad. And so the
jury bought it.
Yeah, the jury bought it and let him off because of insufficient evidence. And 2 weeks later, shot another girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Rick really doesn't want to take that chance. He's known people like this say, "Oh yeah, we're good," but
yeah, really, they betrayed his, you know, his trust.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two things, scenarios. So there's two major locations. There's the prison, and then there's Woodbury.
And
the show keeps switching back and forth. And
at
I think
the wrong times.
Yeah, and I think in this episode they switch back and forth too much. I think they should just focus on the prison or focus on Woodbury and get those done. Then instead of switching back and forth, so we're gonna just talk about the prison for now, and then we'll switch to Woodbury.
Okay. Yeah, so the next scene we see Carl really likes Beth. I don't remember what exactly the scene was, but I just know that there was a moment between them.
Oh, it was just Beth was walking by smiling, and
oh, Carl's like, was smiling. Hey, Beth. And then trips over a rock and falls. I'm just kidding.
Because, yeah.
And then we see...
Well, Rick decides, okay, well, we'll just send the prisoners off with supplies.
Yeah.
They're going to get some supplies, and they're going to send them off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, deal with that.
And then we have a really nice scene where Herschel gets up for the first time. Because, as you know, he's been he amputated his leg a couple episodes ago, and we weren't sure if he's going to survive, and he survived. And now he's up and walking.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really excited about walking, you know? He's a tough old man. And when he comes out into the prison yard, I think... Everybody is really happy, and I think it really resonates with everyone. Like, they're feeling really hopeful now. I mean, especially, I think, you know, Lori, because she thinks, okay, if we can get a man who's just been amputated and get him through that, maybe we can get through a woman during childbirth. Get through pregnancy, yeah. Don't give me that look.
Get through a
woman. I know
woman.
What I'm talking about, okay? A woman get through pregnancy.
So they were all pretty happy. Just going back to the decision about the prisoners, someone said, I think Rick said to T-Dog, would you rather have the prisoners, would Maggie and Glenn, would you rather, you know, sacrifice Maggie and Glenn and have them die, you know, or something like that? Like, choose between Maggie and Glenn or the prisoners, something like that.
Yeah, because like he said, oh, if we send them out there, we're basically executing them. And he's like, oh, would you rather see Maggie or Glenn die? Would you rather see Maggie and Glenn die or those prisoners? And he said, neither.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to see both of them.
Yeah.
So maybe he's like another Dale. Maybe Dale has rubbed off of him still a little bit.
Yeah, who knows? Which is kind of weird because at one point, T-Dog just wanted to abandon everybody.
Yeah.
And drive off to the coast.
Yeah.
With Lori.
So this is vastly different now.
Yeah.
And
so everyone's pretty happy with Herschel walking and, you know, Rick and...
Smiles for the first time in a while.
Yeah, he's smiling. So he looks at Lori and smiles. So
there was also a scene where, I just love Axel. They give him his food after they give him their food and he's like, thank you, bro. You know, it's like, thank you, bro. I'm like, oh my God, kill him with kindness, Axel. That's how you know it. Yeah, so
but you know, Rick and I think it was Glenn as well,
mm-hmm.
and Daryl they were all on the other side because they were burying the bodies. So they were like way on the other side of the grass.
Yeah. And then when Herschel came out, Rick was so happy and he gave Lori a look. And oh my God, I want to cry because it was like the most beautiful look ever. Like it looked like they forgive each other, you know, like there's hope for them, mm-hmm. you know, because he smiles at her and she looks, it's like they're meeting each other for the first time. She's all blushing and bashful, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Carl's like looking like, yeah, this is good. And then we pan a little bit to the right and we see a whole horde of walkers walking right up behind them. And this is where the poop hits the fan.
Yeah, all hell breaks loose.
And everybody splits up because the place is being overrun by walkers, basically.
From the inside,
yeah. And they're separated, and Rick and Glenn and T-Dog are all separated from the rest of the group. Mm-hmm. So they basically have to split up and go to different holes.
So Herschel and Beth ran up some stairs.
Yep.
And they managed to get behind this fence.
They stayed there the whole time.
Yeah, they were lucky. And Herschel actually showed some action there with his... crutches.
With his cane, yeah, with his crutches, which is like, yeah, like, what was the nickname that Talking Dead came up with Herschel?
One-legged Herschel.
Yeah, one-legged Herschel.
One-legged Herschel, he took his crutches and just...
knocked a zombie out.
Knocked a zombie in the head with his crutches. So.
And yeah, so Carol was with T-Dog. Daryl, mm-hmm. Rick, and Glenn were together
They were running as fast as they could.
Yeah, like because Glenn had to tie up the fence again.
Yeah, because they had the door up, the crack
yeah.
open.
Yeah, Herschel was with Beth, and Maggie, Lori, and Carl were together.
And, you know, they were trying the best. They had some guns. Carl had his gun, and they were just shooting walkers, but there was just so many of them.
Being overwhelmed,
yeah. They were running out of bullets and everything. And T-Dog and Carol...
are the ones left, the last ones outside. And T-Dog tries to go and close the fence.
Yeah, because he found where they were coming through and someone had opened that fence. So he was trying to close it.
And in the same time, he got bit in the shoulder.
In the shoulder, which was sad because we all know he's going to die now.
Yeah, because you can't chop off his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And Carol watched that.
Yeah, she was screaming.
And
So T-Dog is going down.
Yeah, and then when they went inside the prison, I think, was it Lori, Maggie, and Carl? Yeah, they went in the prison and they thought, okay, we're safe in our cell. Nope, that's also overrun too. Where they usually sleep, that's overrun and they have to go into the catacombs and the tombs.
Oh, in the deep down where the boiler is and stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
Rick is like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, he's freaking out. He immediately, because he knows, because I don't know who said it, I think it was T-Dog or... Glenn was like, somebody, you know, broke the chains off the fence.
Yeah.
Someone let them in.
Yep.
And immediately Rick turned to the prisoners and said, they did it. They had to have done it. And I think he was going to kill them if it wasn't for the fact that there's an alarm that went off.
Yeah. Just he was like, who did it? The prisoners. Do you think the prisoners did it? And then Rick says, yeah, who else?
Yeah, who else?
Who else could do it? And then all of a sudden this alarm went off.
And now they realize, someone's playing with them.
As you said. And he's like, somebody's playing games around here.
Yeah. So now they're using Oscar and Axel to their advantage, saying, okay, where's the alarm room? We need to turn these off. He's like, yeah, well, I've worked in it a couple times, so I might be able to turn it off. So they go inside and try to turn it off. And once they reach that room, lo and behold, it is Andrew behind the whole thing.
Yeah. He was waiting in there to ambush them.
Yeah. Which is pathetic. I mean, of course he's going to come with a whole bunch of people.
And he's swinging at Rick with an axe or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick and Andrew start duking it out.
Yep. And it would have ended a lot more quicker if Daryl wasn't so busy trying to keep the doors closed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because the walkers were coming into the room.
Yeah, and Oscar was helping too. So then Oscar took it upon himself to take action. And when Rick lost his gun, he picked up his gun and pointed it in the direction of Andrew and Rick. And Andrew's like, come on, take him out. We can take this prison together. Just take him out right now. And
Oscar was pointing the gun at Rick.
Yeah, he was pointing a gun at Rick. And basically, he had to make the decision. Andrew or Rick? I would have picked Andrew. I would have shot Andrew without even thinking about it because, you know, I've seen Rick. So, yeah, Oscar made the right decision and took out Andrew.
And you see his brains blowed out.
I know, right?
Against the wall.
Yeah.
Blood shooting out.
Nice death scene there. And then
he gave the gun to Rick.
And his expression was priceless. He looked, like, terrified, you know, and I think he definitely gained Rick's trust for sure. Saved his life, man.
Yeah, that's how you
proved
do
himself.
It. He proved himself at that point. So
now, having now to sell he's, himself out like Axel.
Now he's a good guy.
Where was Axel during this whole thing?
That's a good question.
Yeah, because he wasn't there.
Axel just hung out outside.
Whatever. Yep, he's being overrun. There were like zombies there.
Well, they killed him in the area.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess Axel hung out outside. And
I guess Axel did you notice really
that? Did you notice that when Oscar was pointing the gun, Daryl was like...
Yeah. He was like a freaking chipmunk just waiting to like... With a knife getting ready to just, you know, pop him in the back if he had to. You know what I mean? A literal backstab.
It was like a ninja. I took a screen grab of that and I put it on our
website. Ooh, screen grab?
I put it on our website.
I took a screen grab. I just pictured you grabbing the screen.
Screenshot? Whatever. And I put that on our website, so because I like that, like Daryl just like a ninja ready.
I know,
pounce.
I love that.
Ready
so
to protect Rick, his buddy.
And then we get to the scene that we have all been waiting for. At least me and him have been waiting for because you know we've seen it before. And I actually wasn't. I didn't know it was going to be this scene in this episode. I wasn't prepared for it.
So Lori is having a baby.
Oh, she's having a baby in a boiler room and with no anesthetics. And, you know, she's had a C-section before, so she's going to have it again. And
Maggie was there, but she didn't have the experience that Carol did.
Was one that practiced it.
She practiced on a walker.
Yeah.
In the previous episode.
So that was the problem. First, she tried pushing standing up and realized it's not going to work.
It's not coming out.
It's not going to come out. And Carl's there the whole time.
It was bleeding.
Yeah, she was bleeding.
Yeah, so that was the sign that something's not going right.
Yeah.
They got to have
anytime
a C-section.
You see blood, it's not going right. Don't know why there's blood, but you just know it's not going to go right. Because you know you're not on your period today.
So, yeah, babies come out without any blood normally. I know because I've seen two births. So blood is not part of the process.
I remember, yes.
You remember.
I know. I remember.
Okay. And she has to have a C-section. So she tells Maggie, we got to go for the C-section.
We have to do it. And she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's suicide. You're going to die for sure because I have no anesthetics. And no, basically, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, you have to do it. You got to do it. And she says, okay. She said, we don't have anything though. She said, well, use Carl's knife. So they're going to have to use Carl's knife to cut Lori open to get Carl's sister out or brother.
Yeah. Which is
cruel.
Cruel, yes.
And
cruel.
Sick.
And Carl's been carrying that knife forever.
Yeah, he's been carrying it for a while.
Since the farm. So he's had that on him for a while. And he's going to be part of that. So that's... at this point, you know, she knows she's going to die. Mm-hmm. And she's probably been preparing for this moment for a long time.
Yeah.
So...
Because, yeah, she's been preparing for the moment where she has to tell Carl.
She's been preparing because you don't know... How it could go. I mean, yes, they practice for a C-section, but mm-hmm. It could always go wrong.
Yeah, because she's before in the previous episode, she's been explaining, you know, what if I don't make it? Mm-hmm. You know, if I don't make it, take me out.
Or what if the baby is a zombie?
Take her out or him out. Whatever. You know, exactly. So it's kind of like, I think it's mandatory for every person in the apocalypse to have like...
A goodbye speech?
Yeah, just like a will. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, I'm going to die. So you take the motorcycle, you take my gun, everybody stay calm. I love you. Goodbye. Good night. Thank you for having me. Drop the mic. Leave.
If you have a chance, unless you're like T-Dog, who just gets bitten and...
Yeah, but T-Dog made it his dying mission to, you know, get Carol to safety.
Yes. So we see that T-Dog he and Carol...
Like how I transitioned there.
He and Carol are running through the hallways.
Yeah, through the tombs trying to get out of there.
There's two walkers blocking the exit.
Mm-hmm. And basically... T-Dog said, okay, this is God's plan. You know, Carol's like, come on, we're going to help you. He's like, no. No, she's like, no. She's like, we made a pact, you know, that if one person gets bit, we have to take them out, you know, just as a way of, you know, just being a good person, you know? And he says, no, God's plan tells me when I need to go, I need to go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get you out of here first. And basically sacrifices himself by throwing himself at these zombies just so Carol could have a clear path to get to safety.
Yeah.
And we have this amazing, gruesome scene where T-Dog is getting ripped apart by zombies.
Yeah, the one walker is like biting his throat.
Ripping
his whole throat out with skin and everything.
Yeah. It was so good. Gross.
Good but or gross?
It was both. It was gross.
It was good and gross.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so that's the end of T-Dog.
And we were so sad because we were waiting for the time that T-Dog would have his moment. And I guess that moment was we try to stick up for the prisoners. He was this, I like to call it their swan song.
Whenever they try to do something good?
Yeah, when they have a speech or something before they die. Because Dale
well,
had
do you
one.
Notice that so far, everyone who dies, well, maybe except Shane.
Shane is exception.
Always kind of goes out on, they've done something really good before they die.
Yeah.
And T-Dog, well, T-Dog did something good. Like he tried to help the prisoners. And
he helped Carol.
He helped Carol. And
I think Shane's good thing was dying.
So he did. That was his contribution. Or, his last goodness.
Or maybe telling him that he, or telling Rick that he needs to talk to his son.
That's true. Yeah.
I think that's the only good thing that I remember.
That's true. He did that good thing. So we'll have to keep an
eye. Yeah, because it made that iconic scene where Rick was in the barn with, you know, Carol or Carl is like, you know,
so this could
I'm
be,
gonna
this
die.
Could be a trend. We'll have to make
what?
We'll have
a trend? What?
More if things happen if it's more than twice, then it's kind of a trend. It's not a coincidence. So
it's three times it's a trend.
Okay.
Twice is a coincidence.
So if we next time some major character dies, we'll have to see if they kind of do something nice.
Yeah.
Or their character turns into something good before they die.
Yeah. What about Lori? Okay, well,
what happens? She was always good.
Yeah, what happens with Lori? Yes, she does unfortunately die. And we'll play a clip here before she her speech to Carl.
Carl? Baby, I don't want you to be scared, okay? This is what I want. This is right. Now, you take care of your daddy for me, all right? And your little brother or sister, you take care of them.
We'll have to do this.
We are going to be fine. You are going to beat this world. I know you will. You are smart, and you are strong, and you are so brave. And I love you.
I love you, too.
You got to do what's right, baby. You promised me you'll always do what's right. It's so easy to do the wrong thing in this world. So... If it feels easy, don't do it. Don't let the world spoil you. You're so good. My sweet boy. The best thing I ever did. I love you. I love you. My sweet, sweet boy, I love you. Okay. Maggie, when this is over, you're gonna have to. You have to do it. It can't be Rick. All right. It's all right. It's all right. I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness, and she dies. Oh my God, oh, I can't watch this scene. Oh, this scene is the hardest scene for me to watch. Every time I watched it, I cried. A little part of me died inside.
Yeah, it was emotional, and there was a lot of important things in that scene, like a lot in the lines. Like she said to him,
can I just say that was really great acting?
Yes. And she says, you're smart.
And you're brave.
And you're brave. And all these good things she told him.
Yeah, she basically said that don't let the world change you and turn you into a monster.
Yeah.
Always do the right thing and stay true to yourself.
And don't let the world spoil you either.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, you need to learn the hard way a little bit too, because that's how you learn, right? You can't just have it all easy. And that's... with anyone. I mean, people who have it easy don't know what it's like and don't learn anything.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what she meant by don't let the world spoil you. And
really, you thought of it that way? I thought when she said, "Oh, don't let the world spoil you." I mean, I thought like the "don't let the world rot you from the inside out." You know what I mean? Like turn you evil.
No.
Spoil,
not like spoil food. Spoil, like, you know, spoil rotten brat.
Why would he be a rotten brat? He won't get anything he wants. He'll be surviving for the rest of his life.
Exactly. It's kind of hard to be spoiled in that world, in the world of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But in general, like, you know, they say, you know, you shouldn't be spoiling kids because it's not good for them.
Don't take what you have for granted.
No, don't take it easy.
Oh, okay.
You know, when everything comes to you easy, then
you don't know the value of hard work.
Yeah, you think everything is easy.
Yeah, and then you start getting sloppy.
You don't appreciate anything.
Yeah,
and you don't learn anything in life.
And that's a lesson we can take away.
Exactly. Well, today. The thing is, what do you say to someone that can encompass all the lessons of life in one sentence? Like, yeah. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you say? You know, you can't say the things that you never got a chance to say.
Yeah, she can't. She's not going to be there anymore to teach him the right thing.
Exactly.
He's going to have to be on his own.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And
it's a sad moment because she knows deep inside that he's becoming more cold
mm-hmm.
every day that goes by.
And she can't do anything about it, especially now that she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's best that she's dead so she doesn't have to see what a monster that Carl could become.
He could become, but he could not. He could change and be
somebody. Yeah, because of this, he could be a better person.
You don't know how he's going to turn out.
Oh, yeah, you don't.
He can go either way.
It'd be nice to see, like, you know, like a reboot of this show with Carl. Old
Carl?
Yeah, like he's like the new Rick.
He'll be like the leader of the
apocalypse.
Basically. I mean, he'd be like, what was that guy in the Terminator?
Terminator?
John Connor?
John Connor, yeah.
Yeah, he'd be like John Connor. Like, he'd be the leader of the resistance.
Against the walkers.
I could see that happening because...
But then there's plenty of other kids who are probably in the same position that he is.
They don't show any other kids in this show.
Exactly, they don't.
So
it's kind of hard.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. So it was really sad because, like I said, yeah. I mean, she's very concerned about Carl. She doesn't mm-hmm. know what's going to happen, and she's afraid for him. You know,
she's very afraid. She doesn't want, and I think now you may be thinking, well, doesn't Carl have Rick? But you know, Rick is kind of unstable.
He's not a good. I don't know if he's a good father. I mean, either both of them have lost connection with Carl.
Yeah,
like they've both lost connection with Carl.
They're just annoyed.
Carl does whatever he wants now.
Yeah,
pretty much, mm-hmm. right?
Because one, Rick is not there all the time to just have to, you know, Rick's not there all the time to baby him, you know, tell him what to do.
And Carl lost respect for Lori because, like, in the...
Wait, why did he think she...
In the last scene, remember, she goes to him, "Oh, why did you go off on your own?" He says, "Get off my back," or whatever, yeah. You know?
He's lost respect for her. But I still want to know why. Was it the time where Rick said, you know, "I killed my best friend for you," mm. you know? Could he kind of gather from that, like, what kind of happened? Or does he have some kind of, you know, messed up, you know, discombobulated version of it?
So do you think that he blames his mom and Rick and his father for Shane?
I don't think that he blames Rick. He doesn't blame Rick. Because they've already explained kind of when he was almost going to shoot Rick,
mm-hmm.
you know, what kind of happened, that he came at him. But... Yeah. I don't think he could do that. I think
that
I
was never really resolved. Like, we don't really know what Carl is thinking right now.
Yeah, we don't even know why he's mad at her. I think the reason why
they maybe because he's just a teenager. Teenagers are always mad at their parents.
I think he's not a teenager yet. He's like 13, 12.
13,
8. Okay. But I think the whole reason why they had Carl be mad at Carol for this while, Lori for this long is just for that moment, that last moment, just to make it hurt more, just for the punchline to hurt even more, that Carl didn't have a very good last few weeks or last few days with Lori, you know what I mean?
Yeah, with his mom.
Yeah, like their relationship didn't end too well. I think that just made it more dramatic.
And the other aspect of the whole birth thing is that Lori really wanted the baby to survive.
Yeah, she really wanted the baby to survive because she realized that this baby is like a beacon of hope. That if this baby survives, it sends a message to the rest of the group that there could to have faith and that there will be some, you know, it's possible to create new life in a world that is dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's so poetic.
That's put very well. And especially when Maggie says, you know, if I cut you, you'll die. She says, I don't care about that. I just want the baby to survive.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if I die.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's really hope. It's hope for everyone. It really means a lot to have this baby there.
Bringing new life, yeah. I mean, it's hope for everybody. Even during today, it's just hope all the time. All the time. Hope all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, and...
because she says the baby has to survive for all of us.
Mm-hmm. And
after the baby's born,
you know,
it comes out okay. Everything's cool. They cut the umbilical.
The baby's creepy, man. The fake baby they had?
It was actually kind of fake. But someone has to shoot Lori now. Or kill Lori, because Lori's going to turn into a walker.
And Maggie can't. I mean, it's not her place. You know, I feel sorry for Maggie. She's just like the bystander in all this. She's just like the Grim Reaper in this one.
She's witnessing a lot of emotional crap. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she killed Lori.
And, well, she didn't really kill her.
Yeah.
But Lori did die while giving birth.
She died, I think, once she cut her open.
Yeah.
And by the way, that scene was so gross.
Mm-hmm.
So much blood. You forgot what you were going to say.
Do you want to talk about Carl?
Yeah. So Carl had to do the deed and had to kill his mother.
How?
By shooting her in the head, just so that she won't come back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard. I mean, you have to kill your mother. She gave birth to you and you have to kill her.
She's kind of technically dead, but still, even if she's dead, pointing a gun at your mother's head and blowing her away.
It's like the worst thing you could possibly do.
That's tough. That's really tough.
Yeah.
And do you notice that? They didn't show it. They just had it off camera.
And they showed the aftermath.
They showed the you could hear the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carl came back through the hallways,
looking like a completely different person. Like, no longer was he the Carl stay inside the house kid anymore.
He wasn't smiling or anything. He was
very stoic. Yeah, and he grew up basically.
At that moment, he became an adult.
Yeah, I mean, you had to blow your mother's brains out. I mean, yeah, you get to see her brains explode. Like, who wants to see that? No one. I don't want to see that.
And then Maggie's looking at him like, "Oh my God, what just happened?"
Yeah, and it's kind of what was I going to say? It kind of reminded me of that movie, X-Men First Class. You know, the beginning where
X-Men First Class.
Yeah, sorry, I said it.
I have to slow down your speed because.
Yeah, X-Men First Class.
Us old people here.
Yes. In the beginning, Magneto, it showed how Magneto came into fruition when he started like harnessing his powers. And because one of the Nazi people said, okay, if you don't move this coin with your mind, then we're going to kill your mother.
Mm.
And he killed his mother right in front of him. You know what I mean? And that changed him. He made him evil. That's why Magneto's evil.
Oh, the Nazi.
Yeah, the Nazi guy said.
Captain, he killed. Yeah, that's right.
He killed his mother. Oh, and it's, oh. I don't like people when people have to kill their mothers. This is really bad.
Mother killing is not fun.
Yeah, so he's a completely different person, and he walks out, and after everything's said and done, Rick is like, okay,
So basically everything finished. They killed all the walkers, and then everybody's coming back to that common area.
Mm-hmm.
And Maggie comes out with the baby and Carl.
Oh, okay. This scene was especially hard. This whole thing was an emotional roller coaster, okay? So they come out. Maggie looks traumatized. She's holding this baby for dear life, you know, trying to recover for what she's just witnessed and had to do. And, you know, Carl's preparing himself to get out there and just goes out there with the same expression he did when he left Lori. And no change in emotion. He wasn't crying, nothing.
Yep.
And when Rick saw the look on Rick's face, oh God, I love Andrew Lincoln. He's such a good actor. The look on his face when he saw the baby, because he first heard the baby cry.
Everybody did, yeah.
Yeah. He first heard the baby cry. He turned around. He stopped in mid-sentence, turned around. And I was wondering what he was thinking. Like, when did he realize that Lori was gone?
Well, he realized it when Maggie and Carl were there, but Lori wasn't.
Yeah. But I would have immediately, like, said, heard the baby cry. The baby's here, but where's Lori? You know what I mean? Yeah, and...
because if Lori was alive, they would have said, oh, don't worry. She's fine. She's in the back.
She's back there.
She's in the
recovering.
Whatever, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They still had hope. They would have said right away.
Yeah.
They didn't say anything,
And then Rick still tried walking past them to get to the... And then Maggie was struggling like, no, she's gone. And then that's when he broke down. He started crying.
Like crazy, yeah.
Yeah, and then he really broke down when he looked back at Carl. And I like to think that when he looked back at Carl, he realized, oh my God, I think... Carl had to witness that,
mm-hmm.
had to maybe even put her down,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how that's affecting him. And and everything is just coming all at once. I think, you know, Rick is like, I've been so terrible to her these past months, and now she's dead, and I didn't even get to see her go.
Yep.
Just really bad.
And
all around bad.
You know, losing all hope of making any amends to the relationship.
Yes, just when you thought it was getting better. I hate that. That's what I hate about it.
When they smiled at each other through the gate, and you thought, oh, there is some hope. Boom. All hope is gone.
I guess Rick can hold on to that moment as, yes, I like to think that we forgave each other in that moment.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. Because Lori loved Rick. Yeah. So there's no point about that. Yeah. Yeah. And that's where the episode ended, officially.
Yeah. But we didn't talk about what happened at Woodbury.
Yes. Now we have to talk about what happened at Woodbury, which is, in contrast, with
what's happening at the prison.
Is nothing.
Is a joke. Really. Like, why do they have those scenes? They're like...
Unnecessary. But actually, it's necessary. They had to put it in there, but still the same.
Yeah, so let's go over some of those key points at Woodbury.
Yeah, so Michonne first finds bullet holes in the Michonne's, army trucks that they found.
Michonne's a detective.
Yeah, she's nosy. She wants to know what's going on because she smells something fishy. Now she needs the evidence. She smells something fishy. Now she needs to catch the fish. Oh! I'm sorry.
She is poking her finger into the bullet holes of the captured military vehicles.
That they caught in the last episode. And
of course, you know, the governor's there.
Pops up. You've been caught, you know?
And she's like, hey, I guess Walker's figured out how to use guns.
Mm-hmm. He says, well, yeah, you know. I don't know what he say. What was his response to that? Everything? Okay.
No, he just basically said that, hey, you know, they got overrun. They must, you know, they probably got overrun with a bunch of other bad people and they shot him and stuff.
How much, you know, BS. And every time that, you know, again, it's this roundabout beating around the bush kind of thing. Just like how Rick and Shane, when they were walking through the forest, like Rick is like, oh, so how did Randall get the upper hand on you, huh, Shane? Why are we out here, Shane, huh? Right? Same thing. He's saying, oh, every time, you know, Michonne is like, oh, you know, why? I guess zombies can use guns now. And, you know, this is all kind of a nice setup here. How did you get all these things? Blah, blah, blah. Every time he was like, well, it's because we have a good team. And you seem like a strong person. I would love you to be on my team. You look really strong. We could use a girl like you. You know what I mean?
Getting on her good side.
Exactly.
But there's no such thing with Michonne. But he's a salesman and Michonne's not buying anything. Just like,
man, we're full of puns here.
Just like when AT&T telemarketers call our house and say, do you want to switch plan?
No, we already switched plan to Verizon. God, just accept it.
And it's like, I have no intention of buying, so leave me alone. Mm-hmm. Actually, I got rid of them by just telling them to put us on the do not call list.
That's it? That's all you have to do?
Apparently, they have a list. And if you say, do not put us on the do not...
Wait, what? Do not put us on the do not call list?
Put us on the do not call list, and they will not call you.
But nobody knows that, and they never tell people that, huh?
Exactly.
So, on purpose?
Yeah. So if you get harassed by telemarketers, just tell them, can you please put me on the do not call list? And they'll say, okay.
Or you could take a blowhorn to every time the phone rings, you answer, like a brrr, and just blow their eardrums. That always works.
Yeah.
Where did I hear that from? I heard that from somewhere.
From another podcast. So Michonne and Andrea are having a chit-chat.
Yeah, they're kind of like separating in ideas and what they want. You know, Michonne is having a really bad gut feeling about this place. And Andrea's like, what are you talking about? I haven't seen anything wrong. This place is like heaven.
Why didn't Michonne tell Andrea about the bullet holes?
I asked myself that same question. Why didn't she tell her? I don't understand why. That was proof right there, because Andrew clearly says, you know, what makes you think this way? He says, oh, I just have a gut feeling and my gut's never been wrong.
Yeah, it's kept us alive so far.
And she buys that a little bit. Andrea does.
Yeah, well, it has. I mean, I'm sure if Andrea was on her loan, Andrea was on by herself, she would have been dead by now.
Oh, yeah.
And Michonne saved her.
Oh, yeah. And made her tough, too.
And I think Andrea appreciates that, but up to a point. Like, I think Andrea wants to stay in Woodbury.
Yeah, would leave Michonne for that.
Yeah.
And they're talking about this when they're looking over some maps and what their next you know, destination is going. Because right now they're still under the fact, they're still under the notion that they're going to leave, or at least Michonne is. So she says, okay, we're going to head toward the coast. That means we have the water all on one side and it's easily defensible. And we might find some boats, you know.
Go to an island.
Live on an island. And then Andrew's like, what? And then live there and die?
Out of old age?
Yeah.
Again, with everybody wanting to go to the coast, like
that's the smartest idea.
Really?
Because then you can sail anywhere, you know? You can go to an island, you can live on the water, or you can sail all the way to Europe and hit, you know, stay in London.
Oh, I don't know about that.
That's what I would do. I would, if I had a really good boat and I had a lot of, you know, if I had one of those boats, like one of the, and because I remember reading, I think it was World War Z, they had the one of the submarines never surfaced when they found out that, the apocalypse happened, and they had their own little like greenhouse, little garden in there. So they were making their own food and everything, you know? So they were self-sufficient. If I could do something like that, I would totally do that. And I'll stop by at every continent, you know, just kind of, you know, see what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lori doesn't want to leave, or not, at least not convinced yet. Or is she convinced at this point that she doesn't want to leave?
I think Andrea is going to stay.
Yeah.
And there's a scene with Andrea and Merle.
I know. Hiding in the secret garden.
Yeah.
And why do they have to do that?
Hiding in the secret garden. What secret garden?
No, remember how they were kind of like in foliage?
Oh, behind
off the main road?
Yeah. And Merle explains how the governor found him and that he owes his life to Merle, to the governor.
Yeah, because Andrew asked him, is the governor a good man?
Mm-hmm.
And basically avoids the question and just says, well, he saved my life, so he's good in my book.
Yeah, so yeah, he's a good man.
And what is so stupid is that Andrew gave him the coordinates to where they were going and where the farm was, if they can find his brother.
Yeah, why would Andrea give the map to Merle about the farm?
It's like all of a sudden they're buddy-buddy. You know what I mean?
And, well, I think, anyway, Merle's going to go to the farm and he's not going to find anything anyway.
Yeah, because it's going to be overrun.
Because it's overrun, so I don't think there's any point of that. But he could potentially come around and find
like a trail or a track or something.
Find the prison.
Yeah, it's true.
So,
but that's not good. And yeah, and then after that, after she gives him all the information, Merle's like, how come we never hooked up? You know what I mean?
So she said, well, you called me names and stuff and, you know, all this stuff. And he goes, well, I guess I have a
way with words, don't I?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh my God, Merle, you know, you're gross. You're like an old man. Get out of here.
And then there's the scene. So Merle has this info now, mm-hmm. and he wants to go out and find
his brother,
Daryl. So he approaches the governor.
Yeah.
And there's a cool scene with the governor playing golf.
Yeah. Like, oh, enjoying a little putt-putt, you know what I mean? Just on the top of a bus, hitting golf balls at walkers, seeing if I can knock him over. And he did. He knocked one over, which is pretty funny. And yeah, the whole time Merle was talking to
the governor,
he was just, you know, throwing golf balls, just, you know, chilling. Looked pretty happy. And then
how did the governor feel about
the governor?
Merle wants to find his brother and he was asking permission from the governor.
And the governor said, well, I need more information. And I don't want you to take my men and then they die. You know, and we never find your brother. Like, I don't think it's kind of hard to find your brother. Basically saying, if you want to find your brother, if you find more information about this, about where your brother is, then I will go with you myself.
He always says that.
Like a compromise, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, you can stay if you want, as long as you want, or you can leave and we'll give you a car, we'll give you food, you know, making both sides very tempting.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think, I'm not sure why Merle wants to, why the governor is so hesitant to let Merle go.
Because he's a valuable member to his group. Because this is my theory. I think that the governor knows that Merle owes him his life, so he knows that he's going to be 100% loyal, which is good because the governor needs as many followers as he can to keep up his like, you know, facade. So if he knows Merle's a ruthless, you know, bastard, and he will do anything, you know, he has a freaking knife for a hand, you know, so he'll kill anyone. He's kind of like his henchman.
Yep.
And so he doesn't want to lose him, and he's selfish like that.
I mean, he could lose him if he finds Daryl and Daryl has like the group and they might welcome Merle back. Merle could just stay with them.
Yeah.
So I think the governor doesn't want to take any chances of losing him. And I think that's all the scenes at the... hold on. Do we have another scene? Let's see. There's another scene with Andrea and the governor.
I realized it just when you realized it. Yeah, they were... Yeah, Andrea basically was going to give her final answer to the governor, I think, because their weapons were with the governor. at the governor's apartment. So she went over and basically he persuaded her, saying, you know.
Well, they were having drinks.
They were having drinks and he persuaded her.
And how convenient. Andrea says, oh, I'm so weak with when it comes to alcohol. If I just drink one glass, I'm done.
He's like, perfect.
It's like, okay, why don't you just admit that, you know.
You want to stay.
Well, that you can be persuaded into doing anything.
I know, right? God.
She's so like, okay, I guess I should booze her up and then convince her.
Yeah, he basically convinces her, doesn't he? Because, no, he says, yeah, so you can decide what you want. And she's like, okay, bye. And then she decides to change her mind.
Yeah, because do you think there is some connection between her and the governor?
I think there's definitely a connection. The way they look at each other, oh my God, there is so a connection. I do not ship that, telling you right now.
And the governor reveals a little bit about his past in that conversation because he talks about his wife. Oh, he lost his wife.
He lost his wife 18 months prior to the apocalypse. And actually, this brings up a good, interesting topic. I read the book about the governor. It's called Rise of the Governor, and it's about how the governor became the governor. Mm-hmm. It's a really good book. I suggest that you guys read it. Kirkman, is it Robert Kirkman? He helped write it. Mm-hmm. So it's really good. A lot of plot twists.
So it describes the governor's history.
Yeah. From before the apocalypse, but right when the apocalypse started.
Okay. So he's telling that he lost his wife 18 months before the apocalypse and he had a daughter and stuff.
Yeah.
He didn't really experience the emotion of his wife dying from a walker, but just from an accident or whatever.
Did he say that his daughter died?
I can't remember what he said about his daughter. Mm. And there's one scene where there's one line where he says, you know, the scenery and landscape has changed, but the way we think hasn't.
Yeah. Was that in the last episode or was that in this episode?
I think it's in this episode. I wrote it down. So
I think it was in the last episode Oh, I don't know. That's a good quote. That's a good one. Yeah. He's basically saying we can still, it's like basically it's all in the mind. It's all in your head. Like if you can change your mind, you can change the world.
Yeah. So anyway, I have it written down here. Maybe it's in our notes for this episode. So I think the governor said it during that time.
And right before, and I think the selling point that totally bought Michonne is was, or not Michonne, Andrea in, was that before she left, she's like, okay, well, saying her goodbyes, like, okay, bye, governor. It was nice meeting you. He's like, Philip.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I thought you said you never said your name. Well, someone told me never to say never. And she's like, I made a difference in his life.
I made him say Philip.
And yeah, that's his name, Philip. Philip. That's it. Just all we know, Philip.
So
that wraps up this episode.
So do we have any trivia?
Ooh, trivia.
What's the trivia?
I just say the word trivia.
Well, the fact that T-Dog died and Lori died was a big blow to the crew.
Yeah.
Of the other actors.
Yeah.
I remember when we saw them in some interviews and they were saying how, you know, as they were, they've been with the show from the beginning,
and they kind of,
T-Dog and Lori,
and they kind of, you know, built a home and like kind of like a relationship with everybody, the cast, the crew, you know, they kind of have this system, they have this kind of like, you know, they're like friends. And now whenever someone leaves, it's really sad because you're not going to see them again. And it's not just for the fans that are not going to see them again, it's the actors aren't going to see them again. And every time they have a death, it's always, they always die in a very, really great way. They always go out with a bang.
Yeah.
And in this episode especially, this was different. Instead of having just one death, they made the fans think, okay, T-Dog died. They can't possibly have someone else die. And then bam, Lori dies.
Yeah, so two deaths in one episode, I think, caught a lot of people off guard because you'd think only T-Dog's going to die.
Yeah, and then you have Lori here who's like dead.
And that was kind of a statement from one of the producers of the show. Mm-hmm. And another trivia thing is that when, the baby was fake.
Yeah, in the boiler room.
Yeah, there was a fake baby. But in the scene where Maggie's carrying out the baby into the court, that was a real baby.
Yeah.
That was a 6-week-old baby, and it was actually twin sisters. Twin baby sisters.
They always have that in the TV business. Every time there's a baby, there's always a twin.
You know why?
To replace them when they're crying. Or they're being fussy.
When they die, no.
What? Oh my
Come they on, drop like, one baby. Extra. They drop one baby. Oops. Hey, we have a twin. Don't worry.
We got
backup baby. Well, no, I think it's because they don't want to put too much stress on one baby.
That's true. Yeah.
They want to balance the time between two. Mm-hmm. So that way, like, let's say a scene is like 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
They'll have 15 minutes will be with one and then 15 minutes will be another. So that way, so it's not a lot of stress on the baby.
Yeah.
I think that's why they do it.
Because, you know, they do the scenes over and over again.
Yeah. So if one baby gets overused, they swap to another one.
Overused? Oh my God. It's like an object.
Yeah. And, but it was really cool. Like the special effects they did on Lori's stomach. She obviously was wearing, you know, a fake stomach and they were cutting it open and stuff. A lot of blood was being pumped out through there.
Oh, so gushy. Did you notice the tattoo?
Of who?
On her belly, there was a tattoo of like a musical note.
There was?
Yeah. Oh, and like a star.
That's a trivia.
Yeah. Trivia. Yeah.
In this episode also, Carol was supposed to die, but the producers decided to switch it and make Lori die instead.
What? Say what now?
Yeah.
I would have rather, you know, Carol die. Who said that? I didn't say that.
Also, another piece of trivia. You know, the Maggie's car, which Lori crashed in one of the, during the farm scene where she flipped it over.
Foolishly crashed it.
Yeah. You can actually see it in the outskirts of Woodbury. So when the governor's playing golf, and he's knocking the golf balls off the bus.
Yeah.
One of the cars on the streets is Maggie's old car.
What? No. So she would have ran right into the place then.
No. It's not.
Oh, it's not supposed to be her car?
It's trivia, Jasmine.
Trivia. I don't get it.
It's not part of the plot. It's just they needed a beat up car. So they just needed used a car.
It wasn't supposed to be Maggie's car. You know what I noticed? That... Now that we've gone through all the season two, that it's what's so different is one thing. After, you know, Lori crashed Maggie's car, people were, I don't know who it was, but someone said to Lori, "And you crashed Maggie's car. Do you remember that?" Oh, I think it was Andrew who said that, you know, when they were having their discussion in the kitchen.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you forgot that you crashed Maggie's car. Like, it's so trivial. Like, so, you know, before the apocalypse.
Yeah, like
pre-apocalypse.
Like, who cares about...
Really? We can find, like, hundreds of cars in the roads. Trust me. That old little, you know, jalopy is not going to, you know, kill anyone.
And that's the end of our show.
Yeah. Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please share this with your friends. We appreciate any feedback you have. You can send feedback at talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And this is Michael.
Stay alive.